The assembled devotees, all glorious to the assembled devotees, all glorious to the assembled devotees, all glorious to Sri Guru and Gauranga, all glorious to Srila Prabhupada, Nama Om Vishnu Padaya, Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale, Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami, Niti Namaste. Namaste, Saraswati Deva, Gauravani Pachaya, Nirvasesa Simravani Paskachaya. Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Chapada Kamalam Sri Gurun Vaishnavam Cha Sri Rupam Sagrajatam Sagana Raghunatham Vitam Sam Sajivam Sadvaitam Sadvadutam Parijana Sahita Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padam Sagana Lalita Sri Vishakam Vitam Cha Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. November 27, 2012, in Vrindavan, India, reading from Bhagavad Gita, Chapter 8, Attaining the Supreme Text 22. Purushasa Parapartha Bhaktya Labhas Tvananyaya Yasyantastani Bhutani Yena Sarvamidam Tatam. Eight. Well, what make a difference?
Anyway, it's a good verse. You're on verse 22?
That's what you told me to do.
Oh, okay. That's a good verse for
you. Please chant.
Yeah. Purusha Sattva
Purushaha, the Supreme Personality, Saha, He, Paraha, the Supreme, than whom no one is greater, Partha, O son of Pritha, Bhaktya, by devotional service, Labhyaha, can be achieved, to, but, Ananyaya, unalloyed, undeviating, Yasya, whom, Antastani, within, Bhutani, all of this material manifestation, Yena, By whom? Sarvam. All. Idam. Whatever we can see. Tatam. Is pervaded. Translation in purport by Srila Prabhupada. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is greater than all, is attainable by unalloyed devotion. Although he is present in his abode, he is all-pervading, and everything is situated within him. Purport. It is here clearly stated that the supreme destination, from which there is no return. Now that's referring back to the previous verse. The previous verse talked about gataha, destination, nirvartante, from which you don't come back. So Prabhupada, in the beginning of the purport, is saying, is connecting this verse with the previous verse. It is here clearly stated that the supreme destination, from which there is no return, is the abode of Krishna, the Supreme Person. The Brahma Samhita describes this abode as Ananda Chinmaya Rasa, a place where everything is full of spiritual bliss. All the variegatedness manifested there is of the quality of spiritual bliss. Nothing there is material. That variegatedness is expanded as the spiritual expansion of the Supreme Godhead Himself, for the manifestation there is totally of the spiritual energy, as explained in Chapter 7. So Prabhupada's talked about the spiritual world, now he's going to talk about the material world. As far as this material world is concerned, although the Lord is always in His supreme abode, He is nonetheless all-pervading by His material energy. So by His spiritual and material energies, He is present everywhere, both in the material and spiritual universes. Yes, yantastani means that everything is sustained within Him, within either His spiritual or material energy. The Lord is all-pervading by these two energies. To enter Krishna's supreme abode, or the innumerable Vaikuntha planets, is possible only by bhakti, devotional service, as clearly indicated here by the word bhaktiya. No other process can help one attain that supreme abode. It's an interesting sentence. Prabhupada says, so no other process can help. He said, it can't even help. Not just no other process can get you there, no other process can even help you. The Vedas, Gopala Tapani Upanishad 121, also describe the supreme abode and the supreme personality of Godhead, Eko Vasi Sarvaga Krishna. In that abode, there is only one supreme personality of Godhead whose name is Krishna. He is the supreme merciful deity, and although situated there as one, He has expanded Himself into millions and millions of plenary expansions. The Vedas compare the Lord to a tree. This is from the commentary of Baladeva Vijayabhushana, who talks about the Lord as a tree. Prabhupada's referencing that here. The Vedas compare the Lord to a tree, standing still, yet bearing many varieties of fruits, flowers, and changing leaves. So the Krishna is in one place, and yet His energies are everywhere. The plenary expansions of the Lord who preside over the Vaikuntha planets are four-armed, and they are known by a variety of names: Purushottama, Trivikrama, Keshava, Madhava, Aniruddha, Rishikesha, Sankarshan, Prajumna, Sridhar, Vasudeva, Damodara, Janardana, Narayana, Vamana, Padmanabha, etc. The Brahma Samhita 537, anybody know which verse that is? Little hint. It was described in the first paragraph of the purport. Anyone know the whole verse? Anybody know the whole verse? Ananda Chinmaya Rasa Pratibha Vithabhi Stabirya Eva Nijarupa Tayakalabhi Goloka Eva Nivasatya Kalatmabhi. Brahma Samhita 537 also confirms that although the Lord is always in the supreme abode, Goloka Vrindavan, He is all-pervading, so that everything is going on nicely. Goloka eva nivasati akilatma bhuddha. As stated in the Vedas, Svetasvara Upanishad 6.8, parashta shaktir vividaya suryate swabhaviki jnana bala kriya cha. What does that mean? Some idea about what this means? Nice to see you in the other dham. Anyone have any idea what this means? Prabhupada quotes this verse a lot, generally just quotes the first line. His energies are everywhere. And the next, Swabhaviki Jnana Bala Kriya Cha.
Cha means also.
Cha means also or add? Bala means strength, yes? Jnana is knowledge. And Kriya? Action. Action. So these energies are the energies of what? These energies that are spread all over are? Energies of? Yes? What energies are they? Yes, yes, Krishna's, but what specific? Rastra Shaktir Vividaya Vishruyate Swabhaviki Jnana Bala Kriya Cha. They're the energies of? Jnana Bala Kriya. Yes? Knowledge and strength and?
Action.
Knowledge, strength, and action, yes. His energies are so expansive that they systematically conduct everything in the cosmic manifestation without a flaw. Although the Supreme Lord is far, far away. Purusha sa para partha bhakti labhyas tananaya yas yanta stani bhutani yena sarvamidam tatam. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is greater than all, is attainable by unalloyed devotion. Although he is present in his abode, he is all-pervading and everything is situated within him. The greatest, Purusha Sa Para. Para means other or supreme. He's the greatest. So we who are practicing Krishna consciousness, we're looking for the best thing. We're going for the greatest. We're not just going to settle. A friend of mine sent me an article by this woman who'd been looking for the perfect husband. And she had looked and looked and looked and looked and looked and looked. And then she got to be 40 and she was still not married. And she said, now I just have to settle for anybody if I want to get married. She says, so I advise people, don't try to find the perfect husband. Just find Mr. Good Enough. So generally in this world, we're all settling for good enough, right? Well, good enough. I guess that's as good as it gets. But we have decided, we who have taken up Krishna consciousness, we have decided that good enough isn't good enough. We want to go for the para, the best. But if you want to go for the best, that may be a little daunting if you want to buy the best house. And just like now in the market, or we see among the ladies, many of them now are wearing these synthetic saris. So a friend of mine in Mayapur said, please pick me up one in the shop. So when I was in the shop, I said, how much are these saris? Oh, they're 600 rupees. Why are these so popular? Well, that's because the silk saris are now 3,000 rupees. I said, actually, everybody wants silk, but they can't afford it. So they're getting the synthetic. So when you want the best thing, the para, it's usually costly. It's out of the reach of most people. So most people settle for good enough. So we want the supreme, and Prabhupada says here at the end, the Supreme Lord is far, far away. And throughout this purport, he's saying he's in his own abode. So perhaps we feel like that sometimes. Well, I want the best. I want the supreme person. I want to have a relationship with the supreme person. I want the supreme abode. It says in the previous verse, Nivartante, you don't have to come back. People go to a nice place for a vacation, then their money runs out and they have to come back. We want to go to the perfect place where we never have to come back. And what is that place? Where everything is spiritual. There's nothing dead. Nothing broken. Nothing breaking. Nothing falling apart.
Nothing stinking. Nothing dirty. No cheating. No disappointment. Not just spiritual, but everything is full of spiritual bliss. Not suffering. Not disease. Disappointment, heartache, etc. So the greatest person and the greatest place from which we don't have to come back. But far, far away. Far, far away. When a person first takes up Krishna consciousness, they often think, oh, this is easy. But after some time, you start seeing, oh, it's far, far away. I want the best person. I want the best place from which I'll never have to return. The struggle will be over. Materially, the struggle's never over. Have you noticed that? So you struggle and struggle and struggle to buy a place, and then you buy the place, and then you have to
maintain it.
You have to take care of it. Right? Even if you settle for Mr. Good Enough, then you still have to maintain it. There's always some struggle. You never reach a point where it's okay, now I've done it. You know, you get your degree, you become a this or that, and then you have to plan your career and maintain your career, and you don't get to a point where you can go, yes, now there's no coming back. There's no more struggle. So that's what we're looking for. That's what we're aiming for. But far, far away. So is it really accessible? Is this supreme Lord and supreme place, is it actually accessible? Can we actually achieve it? You know, or are we like some rickshaw wala hoping to buy his wife a silk sari? You know, it's never going to happen. Are we like a dwarf trying to catch the moon? Is it accessible? And if it's accessible, how do we get it? And can we be cheated? So is Krishna and his abode accessible? Yas yantastani bhutani. Anta means here within. Stani, he's staying within. Everything is staying. This usually means he's staying within everything. Here it's translated as everything staying within him. Everything is within him. Although he's far away, we're inside of him. We're actually inside of him. Just like Krishna showed his mother Yasoda that everything was inside of him. And when Lord Brahma comes to offer obeisances to Krishna after trying to steal Krishna's friends, and he says, the whole universe is existing inside of you. And he also says to Krishna, just like the mother doesn't get offended when the baby in the womb kicks her, so you should not become offended at my foolish activities. So we are all within Krishna. We are all within Krishna, and Krishna is within everything. That means he is very near. Isha Upanishad, he's very far away, but he's also very near. We are within his transcendental body. In the second canto of the Bhagavatam and in the fifth canto of the Bhagavatam, Sukadeva Goswami describes at length how the universe is nothing but the body of the Lord. In fact, the name of the Lord's expansion as Super Soul, Param Atma, means he's the Super Self. He's the Self of the Self. He's the Self of the Self. He's the life of our life. Actually, we couldn't get closer to him than we are at every moment. Sometimes we may have a dear friend in this world that we feel is very close to our heart. You ever have a friend like that? That you talk to them and say, I was thinking of this. Oh, I was thinking of that too. And you're just kind of on the same wavelength. Your minds kind of go in the same direction. They seem to know what you're thinking. You pick up the phone to call them, and as soon as you do that, they ring you. But Krishna is even closer than that. He is aware of our every thought, our every feeling, and he is the self of ourself. Matasvati or Gyanam Apohanam Cha. Every bit of knowledge, remembrance, and even forgetfulness. Many things we like to forget, right? That's coming from him. And he smells our desires. He's aware of our desires. Just like now, it's one of the nice things about this season is that the night blooming jasmine start to spread their fragrance in the evening. The path to where I'm staying, there's some... Oh, is that from your property?
Yeah.
And at the restaurant down on the Parkrun path, the Wholesome Grocery also, if you go there in the evening, this night blooming jasmine. So it's dark, and the flowers are very small. So it's dark, you can't see them, but you know they're there because they spread this fragrance all around. So Krishna is aware of our every thought, every desire, everything. He's right there. I mean, if we take our best friend, the person to whom we're the closest, and we multiply that by millions and millions of times, and that's how close Krishna is to us, and we to him, because we're within him. We're part of him. And also, he's close to us because everything is his energy. Right? The energy here, specifically Prabhupada's mentioning from the Swetasvara Upanishad, what were those energies again? Strength and knowledge and action. Anybody remember the Sanskrit? Bala, Jnana, and Kriya, yes. So Krishna's everywhere by these energies. There's his energy of knowledge. He knows everything. Prabhupada says everything goes on without a flaw. Could you manage things at a distance without a flaw? Hard to manage things even right there without a flaw, isn't it? Even when you're right there supervising everything, still there's so many problems. But even from his own abode, everything's going on without a flaw. His energy of knowledge, he knows everything. He doesn't have to rely on somebody else. Right? If we're managing something from a distance, we have to have somebody there, send me financial reports, send me this report, send me photographs. But Krishna doesn't need that. He doesn't need some local managers. Of course, he has them. He has Indra and Vayu and Agni and Brahma who send him reports. They do send him reports. They come to Svetadrip and they send him reports. And then sometimes the report is, we've lost control of things and the demons are taking over and help. We can't manage it anymore. But he doesn't even need their reports. Full knowledge. And full activity can do whatever he wants. We can't do whatever we want. We may desire to do something, but we don't have the strength or ability. But whatever needs to be done, Krishna has the strength and the ability. He has the power. He's expert in the action, Kriya. He can do any action. He has the strength and power to accomplish it, and he has the knowledge of how to accomplish it. So anything. Recently I saw this article by this one scholar of the Bible saying that actually the God that's described in the Bible is not perfect. It was quite interesting. He gets surprised by things. He was surprised that people were worshiping the golden calf at the bottom of the mountain. He changes his mind. And he gets angry. And I thought, these people don't understand that God is a person. And that even though he's perfect, still he's a person with feelings and with activities and with relationships. But still he's perfect and everything is managed without a flaw. But this means that Krishna is right there. That if we see these energies of strength and knowledge and action in the world, we can see there is Krishna. Or so many descriptions. I mean, we've had just in the previous chapter, in the seventh chapter, Krishna is described how we can see him in the material world. Anybody remember any of the ways Krishna gives in the seventh chapter we can see him in the world?
Water,
taste of water.
Spring.
Flower bearing spring. That's in the tenth, but that'll do. Huh? Ability in man, yes.
The light of the sun.
Light of the sun and the moon.
Smell of the earth.
Yes, smell of the earth. Sound in the ether. Is any sound? Even cars honking?
Shark.
Hmm?
Shark.
That's also 10th chapter.
Light the sun and the moon.
Okay. Taste of water, light of the sun and the moon, syllable om, sound in ether, ability in man. So our ability. We're all having the ability right now to sit. You're having the ability to make garlands. That's Krishna. Hmm? Fame and fortune, fragrance of the earth, heat and fire, I think that's in 10th also. Life of all that lives, penances of ascetics, original seed, intelligence of the intelligent, prowess of the powerful, strength of the strong, devoid of passion and desire, religious sex life, all states of being. So Krishna's just described that in the 7th, reason I was focusing on the 7th chapter, is this is the 8th chapter. So Krishna's already described those particular ways. He describes more in the 10th, in the 9th, and in the 15th chapter. So these are ways we can experience that Krishna's right here. He's the light. The light in this room is also coming from the sun, right? How is this light coming from? Of course, there's still some sunlight coming in the windows. But how is this light coming from the sun? Where's electricity coming from? Water, okay, but the water cycle comes from the sun. The sun is evaporating the water. Do they use hydroelectric power here? They do?
It's thermal.
Hmm?
Thermal.
Is that how they're producing electricity here?
It's coal.
Coal?
Coal.
Okay, coal. If they're burning coal, what's coal? I have to talk to your 6th grade science teacher here. What's coal?
Like fossils.
Fossils, right? It's plants. And where are plants getting their energy? From the sun. So that energy from the sun that's in the coal is being released, or hydroelectric power, the sun is evaporating the water. So even this light in the light bulb is the light of the sun. A little bit. So that's Krishna. Our ability, that's Krishna. So if we meditate like that, how Krishna is everywhere and everything is in Krishna, then we can see that he's not far away, he's actually very near. Although he is far away, he is near as well. So he is actually accessible. He is actually accessible. Although he's the greatest. Although he's the greatest. You know, even great personalities want intimate, loving relationships. Even materially famous, rich, powerful people who keep themselves generally apart from the rest of humanity, they have their intimate relationships, don't they? It's not that they don't want to get close to anyone. So Krishna does want to get close to us, and he is close to us. We can say, well, that's all well and good. He's the light here in the room. He's my ability. He's present by his energies of knowledge and strength and action. But I don't really perceive him. So the secret to perceiving him is also given here. And what is that? Unalloyed bhakti. Bhaktya ananyaya. Ananyaya, which Prabhupada translates in the word for word as unalloyed and undeviating. What does alloyed mean?
Mixed
with something. So bhakti not mixed with anything. We'll talk about this in a moment. Other processes that are either different from bhakti or mixed bhakti. So, and undeviating, it stays bhakti. It's pure bhakti and it stays bhakti. It's not mixed with anything. You know, if you buy gold, you basically never buy unalloyed gold. It's so soft. They mix it with at least a little something. Right? Even here in India where they sell 22, not 24 karat gold. And of course, in America, we only get 14 karat gold. Now going down to 10. In Italy, you can get 18. But anyway, it's alloyed. It's mixed with something. It's not pure. So here it has to be pure, pure love. Pure devotional service. And we throw around these words all the time. Pure devotional service. Pure bhakti. So what is that? What is love? I'm sure that all of us here have meditated, reflected on, talked about, prayed about what is real love. What is this real? What does it mean to love? Now, even in this world, you can only get to know somebody, really know somebody, if you care about them. Just like each of us has so many people who know us, but the only people who really know us are the people we trust. That we trust if we show them ourselves that they'll still like us. Because, I mean, Krishna has aspects that are criticizable, doesn't he? First of all, people criticize him in this material world. Why is there so much suffering? That's what this Bible scholar was saying. Obviously, God is not perfect, he said, because there's so much suffering and unjust suffering. Just like if some terrorist goes to a crowded place and randomly detonates a bomb and kills people. They're terrorists. So God does that. He goes to some place and sets off an earthquake. Sets off a tsunami. And all these people are killed. Without, you know, there's not a war going on. So this scholar was saying that God must not be perfect. This debate has gone on for so many years. God must either be, either he's all powerful and not good, or he's good and not powerful. So people criticize God in this world. Why are so many people suffering? We may criticize Krishna when we're suffering. Krishna, I've served you for so many years, I'm so faithful, and yet you've done this to me and that to me and this to me and that to me. What kind of a friend are you anyway? Right? And what to speak of Krishna's intimate leelas? Krishna's dancing with the gopis. Some of the gopis are married ladies. So from a moralistic point of view, this is shocking. Krishna is performing so many pranks. He's taking the very nice butter that his mother's made and giving it to the monkeys. You know, if you've never been to Vrindavan and don't really know what monkeys are like, that might just sound kind of cute. But if you actually come here and you see what the monkeys are like, you can understand why Mother Yasoda is not so happy that Krishna is feeding the butter from her best cows. You know, she spent all morning making this butter out of yogurt, and Krishna just takes it and gives it to the monkeys. Now, Krishna is always engaged in just sporting activities. He doesn't do anything very serious. You know, if we were to see somebody just sporting, we'd say, what's wrong? Why, can't you get a life? You know, you're just going to play games all day long. And that's all Krishna ever does. He's just playing all day long. He doesn't do any serious work. Never. Never does any serious work. You know, Krishna's not the king. He's the prince. Right? Nandamarj is the king. Or who's the king in Dwarka? Ugrasena. Krishna's the prince. So he just gets to enjoy. So many people could criticize him. So Krishna's not going to show his actual self to someone unless they love him. So people in general, when they think about God, they just think about the great power and the great light, or the old man in the cloud sending people to hell, or something like that. So everyone, including Krishna, only shows himself to love. So what is this? What does it mean to love? Because when you love someone, everything they do is nice. You know that? When you don't love someone, everything they do is not nice. If you love someone, you notice this sometimes with parents and little children. Of very little children. So the child turns the rubbish bin over and the parents are laughing. Because there's love. Or people, you know, when they're newly married, it's like that. Even the faults of the other person are taken as charming. So the devotees are seen like that. So that's one aspect of love, is everything the other person does is good. The devotees are relishing when the gopis come to Mother Yasoda to complain about the butter. They're actually relishing. Oh, your son is so naughty. They're getting bliss from that. They're not really disturbed. And And love is also Rishikesha Rishikena Sevana Bhakti Rishita. When you just want to serve the senses of the other. When your happiness comes from the other's happiness. Now we see that sometimes. Sometimes instead of using your hard-earned money for yourself, you use your hard-earned money to buy something for somebody else. Or your time. Instead of using your time for something for yourself, you use your time to serve somebody else. And haven't we experienced that that can be more pleasurable than using for myself? Cleaning somebody else's room, some guest is coming, somebody I really like, and I clean their room and I get it ready for them. And I don't even feel it as a sacrifice. It's pleasurable. When they come and say, oh, everything's so nice, clean. And you feel happy at their happiness. So that's love. We're all happiness seekers, Anandamaya Vyasat. The abode, it Prabhupada says, Ananda Chinmay Rasa, Ananda. Our home is a home of Ananda, of ever-increasing, unlimited bliss. But what's the greatest source of our bliss? The greatest source of our bliss is giving, serving. And real love means when my happiness is only in seeing you happy. Now, materially, when we're material consciousness, we can't do that 100%. Material consciousness means my mood is of taking, not of giving. That's sort of the definition of material consciousness. That I want others to give. I want to get happiness by others giving to me, although that doesn't really give me happiness. I never feel like I get enough. Research shows that everybody wants 10% more money than they have, no matter how much money they have. So you want 10% to get more, then you want 10% more. We never think, okay, now I have enough. You might think that way for 5 minutes or a week or something, but then again, oh, what about this? Oh, what about this? So when one's in material consciousness, just giving, 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 giving doesn't work. But still we have some experience like that. So real love means my happiness is just in seeing Krishna happy. Prabhupada says the residents of Vrindavan, they just want to see Krishna smile. That's their reward. Their happiness is included in Krishna's happiness. If Krishna, well, because we're part of Krishna. Just like, again, if my stomach is happy, naturally the rest of my body is happy. So when Krishna's happy, I'm happy because I'm part of Krishna. And Krishna's always happy, but when I'm connected and when I'm giving Krishna happiness, I feel happy. So that's love. And you forget about your own happiness. You're so absorbed. Oh, let me do this for my friend. Let me make a nice party for my friend and buy presents for my friend and get something for my friend. And you get absorbed in that. We've all experienced this. You're so absorbed in it, you forget about yourself. You forget that it's lunchtime. You forget everything. You're just thinking, oh, let me do this for the person that I love. Of course, again, materially, after a while we remember, oh, I need to eat and this and that. If our friend doesn't say thank you, we get offended or something. But little idea. So real love is when my only happiness is Krishna's pleasure. And of course, Krishna's only happiness is our pleasure. So don't think we're just like some sort of slave in some sort of demoniac dictatorship that we're just giving, giving, giving to Krishna and Krishna's just taking, taking, taking and sucking everything out and we're just like some dried up little thing without any happiness. No, we actually feel unlimited. Anandam buddhivardhanam. You feel an unlimited ocean of pleasure, although the jiva is finite, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati says. It can feel an unlimited ocean of pleasure. And we give everything for that pleasure. So first of all, our pleasure is from Krishna's pleasure. We're not looking for pleasure independently. We're not looking for pleasure independently. And we're giving everything. We're not holding something back. Not, okay, Krishna, I'll work hard for you with my body, but my mind will stay on something else. Or, Krishna, I'll work hard for you with my body, I'll think about pleasing you, but my will, my desires, that's on something else. Unalloyed. Everything. Body, mind. Mind means thinking, feeling and willing, my thoughts about Krishna, my emotions about Krishna, my will, my desire, that for Krishna. Again, when we hear this, we may become like, ooh, I don't know if I want to do that. Because materially, if I do that for somebody else, they will exploit me. And I will be disappointed. Guaranteed. If you give your body, mind, you know, thinking, feeling, and willing to some other conditioned jiva, you will be disappointed. Absolutely guaranteed. You know, whether you give it to your country or your employer or your family member or whatever. But Krishna's not like that, because Krishna's the self of the self. Really, we're giving everything to our super self. Krishna isn't really an other. So that is love. Taking pleasure in that love. Taking pleasure in the process of love. Materially, we're taking pleasure in uniting our senses with their sense objects, physical, mental, for our own pleasure. We're trying to take. But that's not love, that's exploitation. And love is taking, just enjoying the process of loving. And of course, that means some practical engagement of the senses. It doesn't just mean, I love Krishna. It means you're actually doing something. If you have love, you do something. You dedicate yourself. Of course, that's easier, I think, than really surrendering the will. But it's certainly part of it. Dedicating oneself for the mission. What's Krishna's mission? To reclaim all the fallen souls. One of my friends wrote recently, you know, who would really want to go out and save others? It's hard. Serving others, sacrificing yourself. But that is also love. Because that's what Krishna wants most of all. Patram pushpam palam trayam yome bhakta prayachati tanaham bhakti paritam ashnami maharatatmanam. Krishna wants a leaf, a flower, fruit, or water, but beyond that, he wants the love of the jivas. That's what he really wants. So if we not only offer ourselves, but if we help others to offer themselves. So that is also a manifestation of love, that I dedicate myself to what Krishna wants, to what Srila Prabhupada wants, to what Krishna's devotees want. All right, now what is not love? Because here, Prabhupada also says that no other process can help one. So we may be convinced that we want the Supreme Person, Purushabra. We may be convinced that that Supreme Person, although in the greatest abode, is actually accessible because he's everywhere and everything's in him and he's all-pervading by his energies. And we may even be convinced, theoretically, that the only way to achieve him is pure bhakti. But we may not end up practicing pure bhakti. We may end up adulterating our bhakti. In fact, this is quite common. Rupa Goswami says that as one is practicing Krishna consciousness, one is watering the little plant of bhakti. But he says that what often happens... Well, who here has ever had a garden? Anybody had a garden? Oh, we should get out more and plant. I remember my first garden, it was a flower garden, and this is so embarrassing. This was at Gitanagari. My only excuse is that I was very young. But anyway, so I decided to have a little flower garden, and my husband prepared the soil, and I got some marigold and zinnia seeds, and I planted them in the soil. And what came up was a complete carpet of green. You know, I planted the little seeds in rows, but it was just... And I looked at it and went, oh no. I had no way to tell what was a weed and what was a flower. I wasn't experienced enough to just tell by the seedlings. I had to wait till they were like about this high before I could distinguish. You know, and sometimes you have to wait till they actually flower before you can tell. And sometimes even then you can't tell. Sometimes we get very attached to our weeds. Isn't it? Yes. So Rupa Goswami says that when you're watering the bhakti creeper, sometimes other weeds that look like the bhakti creeper, you know, if you've ever seen little plants, they look very alike in their beginning stages. I mean, unless you really know what you're doing. There's two little seed leaves. What do they call them? Starts with a C. Cookie, neon, or something, anyway. The two little seed leaves that are inside the seed, and then the other little leaves. And I would be staring at them and going, is that a marigold? Is that not a marigold? Is that a marigold? Is that not a marigold? And Rupa Goswami says they're packed up tight with this Bhakti Lata creeper. And you can go on watering the weeds and watering the weeds and watering the weeds and watering the weeds, and your poor little marigold plant is getting all strangled. And then you may wonder, well, why aren't I experiencing this bliss? You know, I came for the bliss. Where is it? Srila Prabhupada says that when you're eating, you know you're satisfied. You must be satisfied by eating, unless you're not really eating. Not really eating means like chewing gum. You know, something's in your mouth, it has some flavor, there's some saliva, and your jaw's moving, but there's no nourishment. Or some of the modern food that's not really food. You know, this modern food that's just looks like food, tastes something like food, and zero calories, you know, zero nutrition food. So you're not really eating, or he said there's parasites in your stomach. Parasites means the offenses. So we're not going to look right now at the offenses. We're going to look at not really eating. Thinking you're eating, but actually chewing gum. So other processes. So what are the other processes a person can think will get them the Supreme? Some ideas?
Karma and jnana.
Karma and jnana. So regular old karma. What's regular old karma?
Work.
Work. And what's the goal of karma?
Sense
gratification. Heaven, swarga. Sense gratification. This life, beautiful house, you know, beautiful accomplished spouse, happy intelligent children, lots of money, big position in society, fancy car, like that. So that's swarga in this life. Swimming pool maybe. Big flat screen TV with 500 channels and whatever, all the latest electronic gizmos, you know. And then there's, of course, the actual swarga, which is a lot better than you can get in Kali Yuga on this planet, with the Nandanandana gardens and the heavenly damsels and the somaras, etc., etc. So that's the goal of karma. The goal of karma is to enjoy this material world. And there are many, many people who think they can attain God by karma. Karma means pious activities. Correct? Are there many religious people in the world today who think they can attain God by being pious? Yes? Yeah. Many religious systems teach. Yes? Whether you're Christian, whether you're Hindu, whether you're Muslim, whatever, Jewish, Buddhist. If you're just a good person, you're responsible, you take good care of your family, you don't break any laws, you don't do anything immoral, you're ethical, you give in charity, you go to a place of worship and you say your prayers, then you'll attain God. So that's the path of karma. And the best you can do with karma is go to swarga. Temporarily. Then you have to come back. It's just like a vacation to Hawaii, and when your money runs out, you have to come back. Your visa expires. So that will not actually get you to Krishna. Because that's not love. You're still thinking, what about me? I want the swimming pool. I want the mango trees. You know, I want the beautiful girl, handsome man. There's no love. Okay, then jnana. Actually, we should go to the next step. Up from karma. What's the next step up from karma? Before jnana. No, that's fine.
Karma yoga.
So karma yoga, you're still doing pious activities, but your goal is now salvation. Your goal is purification. You've basically gone from rajagun to sattvagun. Karma is very much in rajagun. So now your goal is salvation. Now you want purification. So you're still doing your duties. You're a good varnashram person. You're a good Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra. You're a good Grahastha, Brahmachari, Vanaprastha, Sannyas. You do your duties in the world. You follow all the rules. But your goal is, I want to become purified. I want to become peaceful. I don't just want to enjoy the world. So, of course, what's your destination there if you're a perfect karma yogi? No, unfortunately. Huh? You can go to the Brahma Jyoti, highest karma yogi, and go to the Brahma Jyoti. Most karma yogis become like higher entities in the universe. They become like one of the Prajapatis or somebody like that. So still, again, you don't get Krishna because there's no love. You're still thinking about myself. I want to become purified. I want to attain peace. It's still I. Then what's higher than karma yoga? What's the next step? Jnana yoga. So jnana yoga, you're no longer just trying to be a nice, pious person in the world. What are you spending most of your time doing? No, not meditation. That's next.
Studying.
You're studying the Shastra, especially studying philosophy, studying the Upanishads, and trying by study to become convinced, and detachment, some austerity, to become convinced of what? What are you trying to become convinced of?
You're not that body.
You're not that body, aham brahmasmi. So by philosophical conviction and by detachment. And by the way, you can't even practice jnana yoga or karma yoga unless you're first of all a pious person. You can't just go from being an average Kali Yuga Vikarmi to just practicing jnana yoga, because you won't be able to do it. You'll be sitting there studying the Upanishads and you'll say, yeah, I gotta go see a movie, or I gotta drink a can of Coke or something. You know, you just won't be able to have the presence of mind without the piety. So it's not just available to anyone. But what does the jnana yogi achieve, the perfect jnana yogi achieve?
Brahman.
Brahman, or sometimes the higher planets of rishis, like where the four Kumaras and Pipalayana Muni and those people stand. So sometimes the higher planets of the rishis. But still, you're not really attaining Krishna, because still there's no love. You're still thinking about me. How can I get free of all my designations? How can I get free of all my entanglements? How can I just find peace? How can I find reality? And then higher than jnana yoga is? Raja yoga or jnana yoga. And what is the process there?
Meditation.
Now that also, you have to be very qualified. You have to at least have been a pious person. And you have to have already perfected either karma yoga or jnana yoga. So you can go karma yoga, dhyan yoga, or you can go karma, dhyan yoga. And in there, what are you meditating on? Paramatma. And what do you want? What does the dhyan yogi want? Some of them want to merge into, some of them want to merge into Brahman, some of them want powers. So they want to be a controller on the subtle level. You know, they've understood that controlling gross matter doesn't work very well. They want to control subtle matter. Or the highest aspect of the jnana yogis, they want, what do they want to attain?
Moksha.
They want to attain moksha with paramatma, with the super soul. They want all knowledge. Right? Brahman is just all existence. And jnana yoga, they want existence and knowledge. They want to be full of the supreme knowledge. But it's still about them. It's still about them. So those processes in and of themselves cannot get us actual love of God, cannot get us a supreme destination. And there can be karma-covered bhakti or jnana-covered bhakti. Therefore, Rupa Goswami says, karma, jnana-karma anavritam. That bhakti should not be covered by jnana or karma. So if we're thinking, well, yeah, I want to just love Krishna, but I also need these other things too. I need them. Now, of course, attaining bhakti, we suggest that you're a pious person. But who attained bhakti without being a pious person? Magrari the hunter. Who else?
Jagai and
Madai. Who else?
Bhutana.
Who else?
Valmiki.
Who else?
Vritrasura.
What about the Haridas Thakura's disciple, the prostitute lady? So you can attain bhakti immediately from even impious activity. You don't have to go through pious activity. So of course, we say to people, you should be a pious person. You shouldn't perform sinful activities. But bhakti is not dependent even on pious activities. If someone says you must perform pious activities in order to attain bhakti, they're covering bhakti with karma. Does karma cover bhakti? They're saying if in order to achieve bhakti, you have to follow all the rules of varnashram. Is that even possible, Miss Edge? Pretty hard. Pretty difficult to follow all the rules of varnashram right now. Maybe later in Mahaprabhu's golden age, but it will happen. But for right now, if we had to follow all of those rules. Or if someone says, in order to attain bhakti, you have to be well versed in all the Upanishads. Or even you have to know, all of the different Sanskrit terms and all. What are they doing then? Gyan covered bhakti. You don't need either karma covered bhakti or gyan covered bhakti. Just bhakti. Just bhakti. Now, of course, we want to have gyan, and we want to have activities. We want to have pious activities. We don't want to be sinful persons. We don't want to be ignorant persons. But actually, only bhakti gives bhakti. Now, if you really love Krishna, of course, you're going to want to behave nicely. And of course, you're going to want to know something about Krishna. But that goes in the other direction. If I love Krishna, I will want to behave nicely to please Krishna. If I love Krishna, I will want to know something about Krishna in order to love him. Then that kind of knowledge and activity is part of bhakti. But not in order to love Krishna, I have to be a pious person in the world. In order to love Krishna, I have to be a knowledgeable person in the world. No, it's not true. And those are weeds. So if one is going on and 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 not making much progress, one may be watering the weeds. And one has to be very careful that our process is one of love. Our process is one of love. And although we may appear to be, we should appear to be, very materially pious people, we should appear to be materially pious people. We should not be thieves and rogues and intoxicated, licentious people. We should be following the principles of no illicit sex, no meat eating, no intoxication, no gambling, not lying, cheating, stealing, etc. Are we pious people to be pious people? Are we pious people because we think if I'm a pious person, I need to be a pious person in order to achieve perfection? No. But that will please Krishna. That's all. So we start with bhakti. Whatever we're doing is coming from bhakti. We're studying this knowledge in the Bhagavad Gita, not because we're thinking, by knowledge I will attain perfection, but because we love Krishna, and Krishna's happy if we study what he says. If you love somebody, you want to read what they say. It's a different mentality. And if we have this love, then although Krishna is the greatest and he's very far away, dwarf trying to catch the moon, a rickshaw wallah trying to buy his wife a silk sari, something impossible, and then it's very possible. Because Krishna's right here and he responds to love. And he responds to love very quickly and very easily. In fact, not only does he respond to love, he gets conquered by love. He gets controlled by the love of his devotees. Prabhupada said, the devotee holds Krishna in the palm of his hand. And Krishna wants that kind of relationship with us. So very far, but very near as well. Very far, but very near as well. If we adopt the actual process of love, which is full surrender and taking pleasure only in the pleasure of the beloved. So questions, comments, corrections, additions, subtractions, chastisements.
I have this.
Yes.
Couple of things.
Okay.
First of all, it's such a wonderful opportunity for me to finally see you in person.
Oh.
And you're certainly a wonderful representative for the women.
I'm very grateful
to be here. But I have a couple of questions, and I have one question and one comment.
Okay.
Okay, the question is in the Bhagavad Gita it says four kinds of pious men surrender to Krishna, and four kinds of impious men never surrender to Krishna. So, how do we, I've never thought before that Jagai and Madai were impious persons, or that these other entities were impious persons. I always thought that their exterior was different from the interior.
Well, that's an interesting way to think about it.
Oh, okay. And then another comment about your scholar, your biblical scholar.
Can we do one thing at a time?
Oh, sure.
Okay.
I didn't know you were going to say more. I hope you do.
So Krishna also says, even if you're the most sinful of all sinners, you can pass over the, the ocean of all material miseries in the boat of transcendental knowledge. He does say that only those who are pious in this life and in previous life can take to my devotional service with determination. So generally speaking, it's only pious people who surrender to Krishna, but bhakti is independent. And if you think that bhakti is dependent on piety, it's karma-covered bhakti. And it's quite interesting what you say about Jaghai and Madai. We were meditating on this in our nectar devotion class because it was saying, Rupa Goswami was talking about how you can attain bhava. It was bhava or prema, I think it was bhava, in three ways. And one of them was by glancing. So one of them is by the words of Krishna or the devotees, the good wishes. This is attaining bhakti through mercy. The good wishes of Krishna or the devotee are by glancing. And by glancing means you see Krishna. So we were talking about that just seeing Krishna doesn't necessarily awaken love. Now, the four pious people, Gajendra is listed as one of them by Rupa Goswami, that he was someone in distress. But when he saw Krishna, and perhaps right before then, but when he saw Lord Vishnu, he switched. He gave up his desire to be free from distress, and he changed to love. Dhruva Maharaj is also given an example of a pious person, that he wanted money, but as soon as he saw Lord Vishnu, he didn't want money anymore. Whereas, say, Daksha wanted unlimited sexual prowess in service, not disconnected from service, but still he wanted it for himself. And he was feeling even some bhava. But when he saw Vishnu, he still asked for something material. It's not that when he saw Vishnu, his material desires went away. Dhruva's material desires going away, Gajendra's material desires going away, was a matter of them making a personal choice upon seeing the Lord. It wasn't an automatic effect of seeing the Lord. That depends on the person's desires. But even a person who is actually sinful, Magrari was sinful. We never read that Magrari was actually just some nice guy inside and, you know, he was abused by his father or something like that. You know. He was nasty. He was a sadist. He was enjoying half-killing animals and seeing them squirm in pain and die a long, slow, painful death. That was his idea of pleasure. Or the prostitute. I mean, she was like, yeah, I'll discredit this saintly person for money. That's nasty. Is that Vaishnava Aparad? Yeah, I think so. I'll pay you to ruin the reputation of this saintly person. Sure. They were sinful. They didn't have a pious mentality. But somehow or other, in association with the devotees, they changed. They went immediately from Vikarma to Bhakti. So generally, people who are pious take to Krishna consciousness. Generally. But Bhakti is independent. And if you think you have to be pious in order to take to Bhakti, you must be. If your material life isn't together, you can't be a devotee. That's karma covered by. If you say to somebody, you know, sorry, you're already 40 years old, you've already been divorced 2 times, you know, you can't come to the, you can't attain bhakti in this life, you can chant a little, you'll have to die, take birth again, and have a pious life, and then you can become a devotee. That's karma covered by. You're too sinful in this life. You can't make it. No, you can come from directly from your sinful life too. Is that okay? Is that clarified?
That's perfect.
Okay. And your other question?
Actually, a couple of comments. You're referring to your the this biblical scholar that you referred to.
Yeah.
And he said the God in the Bible is an imperfect God.
Yes.
One of the examples he gave was that God was surprised.
He was surprised, yes.
Well, I have something to share, if I may. I was in the kitchen in Berkeley, California, and I was thinking of making some nice preparation for Lord Jagannath that would surprise him. And then I thought, oh, Jagannath, you're no fun. Nobody can surprise you. So years passed, actually, 3 or 4 years passed. My husband and I had moved to from Berkeley to Oregon. And I came back down for a visit, and they said, oh, please, would you dress Lord Jagannath? I said, I'd love to. So when I went on the altar, Lord Jagannath let me know that he was surprised to see me. And at the same time, he brought to my attention what I had thought in the kitchen, that he was doing fun.
Uh-huh.
So Krishna does have these little, you know, features for us to learn to love him. So that's just a little comment.
Oh, that's nice.
Another little comment.
Krishna gets surprised when the cowherd boys put a flower in his mouth instead of a sweet ball.
good example.
But the scholar was saying if God can get surprised, he can't be all-knowing.
Oh.
Now, so their idea of perfection is boring, basically. Their idea is if God's perfect, he must always be bored.
Bored and boring,
yes. Yeah.
Another comment about loving. I feel that women have an edge on loving because...
Well, you'll have to argue with the men about that.
The only time I've ever loved completely anyone was when my first son was born. Mm. And so with that, I always thought it's a real gift to be a woman because not only are we considered second class, which is, you know, very, very cooling, it's a very calming thing, but we also remember this love that we experience with our own children.
Mm.
I have that moment.
Yes, well, Prabhupada gives two examples of advantages when you have a woman's body. One is that you're soft-hearted, which materially can mean just that your emotions conquer your intelligence, by the way. But because bhakti is ultimately about being soft-hearted, we can turn the material sentimentality, that means senses and mind, to actual bhakti. And also women have a tendency to follow authority. Men have to be trained as brahmacharis to follow authority, whereas women don't have to be trained like that. We're naturally inclined to follow authority. So those are our advantages. Anyway, all material bodies, you know, I'm sorry to inform all of you, but abrama, bhuvana, lokal, all material bodies are really a disadvantage for loving Krishna. If you really want to love Krishna, you have to be in your spiritual body.
Wow. And you think so?
Definitely. Definitely. This material body is not designed. Material body is designed for sense gratification.
Yes.
It's not designed for bhakti. You can use it for bhakti. Therefore, Prabhupada says, make the
best
use of a bad bargain. It's just like the prison cell is not designed for being a good citizen. They do not design prisons and prison cells for making the best contribution for your country. Now, you can make a contribution to your country from a prison cell. It's possible. You can do it. But that's not the function of the prison cell. So the mystery of this material world, Prabhupada says, is that you can use it both for sense gratification and for liberation. But it's the spiritual world and the spiritual body that are designed, that are the product of love. So this body is a bad bargain. You can have male, female, black, white, brown, purple, green, old, young, Indian, American, Chinese, Peruvian, you know, demigod, lower planet demon, you know, I pick your body. And we do, you know, let me try this one, let me try that one, let me try this one, let me try that one. As far as spiritual life, they're all disadvantages. So you can say, well, this one is an advantage, this is an advantage in this way, and this is an advantage in this way, and this is an advantage in that way. So, better look at the body and mind that you have, see what the advantages are and use those. And don't worry about what advantages you don't have, because otherwise you just go from one body to another. So it's kind of, if you're going to a destination and you're in a vehicle, you just see what kind of vehicle do I have? Do I have a bicycle? Do I have a skateboard? You know, do I have a scooter? Do I have a motorcycle? Do I have a car? Do I have a boat? Do I have a plane? What do I have? and then use that to get to your destination. And don't worry, you know, I wonder, that person has a car, or is that better? I've got a scooter, they've got a motorcycle. Well, motorcycle goes faster, but a scooter is safer, or, you know, whatever. Then, you know, whatever it is. So whatever you have, just try to use it to serve Krishna and just be satisfied. Don't hanker after this or that. Yes?
I have the mic, so I can talk.
Yes, please. Oh, she's got the mic. She's usurped
it. Mansi, do you have to chant to get bhakti?
Do you have to chant to get bhakti? Ooh, what a question. Absolutely no. Any of the nine processes are sufficient. Any one of the nine processes. Just hearing, just surrendering, just serving the deity can give you perfection. In fact, just one time seeing the Ratha-Yatra-kart, one time drinking Charanamrita has the potency, the power to give you perfection. However, having said that, Hari Nama, Hari Nama, Eva Kevalam, Kalavana, Stevana, Stevana, Steva, Gantiranita. To attain perfection without chanting at the present time probably isn't going to happen. No, you don't count on the rare possibilities. But anyway, if you love Krishna, well, of course you'll say his name. What we're doing in sadhana bhakti is we're imitating the activities of someone who already loves Krishna. Just like there's so many material love songs where someone is singing, you know, oh, whatever it is, oh, Gloria, Gloria, oh, Sally, Sally, oh, John, John, you know. So if you love somebody, you talk about them, you say their name, it's natural. So those who love Krishna are always saying his name, and Krishna is his name. When you say his name, Krishna's there. So, and it's free. It's free. It's easy. Easily, why not? I mean, unless you're mute. There's that one rickshaw wala who's mute, so he can't chant. Unless you actually can't chant, you know, you've had throat cancer and your vocal box is cut out, or you're in the hospital with a tube down your throat or something, you've got severe laryngitis and you just can't chant. Why not? What's our objection to chanting? So that's the main process that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is given. But yes, bhakti is so powerful. Any contact with bhakti, just one time, I mean, this is given, the nectar devotion, so many examples. You've all read the nectar devotion? Just one time seeing the deity, one time following the procession, one time taking charanamrita, just lava matra. What is it? Sadhu sangha, sarva shastra hoy, lava matra, sadhu sangha, sarva siddhi hoy. 1/11th of a second of association with a sadhu, you get all siddhi. But then you will chant. Certainly you will chant, so why not? And chanting is so nice.
Wait, one comment.
Keep getting your shirt.
I have a friend who's a deaf mute, and in his preaching, which is very profuse, he maintains that the spirit soul is not deaf and mute. So chanting the holy name is...
can go on internally.
Yeah, can go on internally.
Yes, I also have done some preaching with deaf devotees in the UK. And we published an article about that in Back to Godhead called Silent Sounds. But there was a big discussion among the editors about it. You know, can you really say that they're chanting? Because they're just going like this.
That's wonderful. I like that. How do I do that again?
This is Krishna, and this is Rama. So they chant like that. And the leader of the group, he got initiated with a vow of 4 rounds, because it takes him 2 hours to chant 4 rounds. Because he can't verbalize and he can't hear. So the way he chants is he just like looks at the word, fingers his beads and looks at the word, or he'll move his mouth, or he'll meditate on the form of the deities. So that's his form of chanting. But it's they're, some of them are very, very nice devotees. But still, they can't chant in the ordinary sense that we think about chanting.
Okay. Not ordinary.
There you go. Parvati's defeated me again. Yes?
This is a question for everybody.
Yes?
I guess I'm seeking some guidance.
Don't let go of the mic now that you have it.
Oh, fair. this is the last question. I'm fairly new, only a few years on this bhakti way. And my experience so far is I'm not conscious of being in love with Krishna or Radharani or any of it. I just feel I'm in love with Shandas, I'm in love with Sadhu Maharaj, I am delighted to be able to come to Vrindavan and serve the children at Sandipani Muni School.
That all sounds like a very good start. I think that you're just like not recognizing what you already have.
Well, it's like it's hidden.
I don't love Krishna, but I love his devotees and I love his place and I love service.
Right, well, it's like I'm not conscious of it.
Sounds pretty good to me.
Well, does continuing to do this seva and chanting and so on actually evoke eventually, like the Chandas tells me, you don't love
yes.
me, you love what I love, and that's Krishna.
Yes. Well, just like Prabhupada told my father. My father said, I'm coming to the temple to see my daughter and son-in-law, not to see Krishna. Like, is that okay? And Prabhupada said, yes. He was in a very relaxed mood. He was sitting back like this with his dhoti up, like just like the picture, just like that. And Prabhupada looked at my husband and I, and he said, yes, he said, they are loving Krishna. Chanting and dancing are symptoms of loving Krishna. So they are loving Krishna, and you are loving them. So two things equal to the same thing are equal to each other.
I just hope someday I can have an unalloyed experience.
Well, it's what's really nice is just hoping for that and just desiring that, Prabhupada says. That's enough. Because really what pushes us into unalloyed bhakti is only the desire for it. When the desire for that is so strong that you don't want anything else. You know, if I want unalloyed bhakti, but I also want this and I also want that. And I also want this. But when that's all I want, then that's what Krishna wants. That's what he wants. He wants us. And so as soon as that's what we want, then we will get it. But it sounds like you're already feeling love for many things associated with Krishna. So that's a good start. That's a good start. You have a lot more there than you think you have.
I have gone through a major shift, which is like I wouldn't bow ever before to anything or anybody. Because I didn't feel, quote, sincere. Until I had the feeling, I can't do this. I'll just be a fake.
Uh-huh.
And then we were with Shandas on the top of the Govardhan Hill one day. And he said, you have to bow here. Aye, aye, sir. And, you know, I did. And then I realized, that previous attitude was really about me.
Mm.
And that if this place was the most sacred place in the universe to all these other devotees, then I have to bow for their sake. And also, I bow not because I'm humble, but to become humble.
It works that way. Well, actually, we are bowing all the time. The body says, go to sleep. I want to do a couple more things. Go to sleep. Just one more thing. I want to stay up just a little longer. Go to sleep. And after a while, it's just... Right? How long can you wait to use the toilet? Eventually you have to bow to the body. Isn't it?
That's true.
You know? We're bowing to so many things. We're already bowing. This idea that I'm not bowing is just... So why not? Why not bow to Krishna? Why not bow? Actually, I've written an article about bowing down and come out and back to Godhead in a few months. Anybody else? Thank you. Thank you for sharing. Thank you very much. Anybody else?
Actually...
Wait, before anybody, because you already said like 2-3 things. Is there anybody else who didn't say anything who would like to? All the men's side are silent. You chanted the verse second, and now you're all silent. Okay, we'll take one last thing, and then we should end.
Actually, you could probably say it more perfectly than I.
I doubt that.
Because Srila Prabhupada knows that something to the effect, I hate to paraphrase him, but it's been a long time. Srila Prabhupada said that the practice is the end result. So if we don't feel like bowing down, eventually we will by bowing down. The
yes.
practice is the end result.
Well, what we're doing is we're practicing to be in our natural position.
Right.
Just like a newborn baby, one of the tests they have for a newborn baby, there's 10 tests, called an Apgar scale. And one of the things they do is they hold the newborn, just born, baby up, and they see if its legs move in a walking motion. One of the things they look to see if the neurology is normal. So walking is normal, and when the child practices to walk, they're practicing to do something normal. So everything where we're practicing in bhakti are the kind of activities that an enlightened self-realized person does. What does an enlightened self-realized person do? They're always saying the name of God. They're always serving Krishna. They're always working for the welfare of all living entities. You know, they're always offering obeisances, not only to Krishna, but to all the devotees. I mean, everything that we're doing are really, we're just practicing our natural activities. And just, it's exactly like the child learning to walk. You know, when the child, so you said you have children, so, you know, when your child first learns how to walk, first they usually stand up holding on to something. And then they stand up just for a couple seconds, and then they fall, and then they stand up again, and then they fall. And they get so excited, you know, they stand up just for a couple seconds, and they're so excited that they fall in their excitement, you know. Eventually they stand up without holding on to something. Eventually they take one step, and you call your parents and your brothers and sisters and all your friends, and you know, he just took one step, and you have a party, and... So it seems like it's a struggle for the child, and they fall, they get bruises. You know, children first learning how to walk, they're often bumping into things. Their forehead is usually covered with bruises, and their legs, and you know, they're all battered. And they spend a lot more time on the ground than they do standing up. So it seems like it's something artificial and unnatural for them. They're working at it, but actually, it's natural. And once you, I mean, now. Hopefully, none of us have to think about walking. It's just our natural situation. So bhakti is like that. It's our natural situation. But because we've come into an unnatural condition due to our own foolishness, therefore we have to practice to do what is natural. But those who are self-realized do exactly what we're doing in sadhana bhakti, but they just do it spontaneously. They don't have to work at it. Yes?
One time you mentioned about spiritual body.
Pass the mic.
We came to the point to become purified completely.
Wait, let's get the mic.
Why is coming here?
Just say it on the mic. It goes on the radio. Okay.
Thank you. You mentioned about the spiritual body.
Yes.
So potentially when Guru gives you initiation,
yes.
When he gives us initiation, he gives a spiritual body to be developed.
It awakens, it starts to awaken the spiritual body.
Yeah, but at the same time, we mentioned that if you came to the point that you have real love for Krishna, that we can realize bhakti. So my point is, if we don't have a spontaneous love...
Can you speak louder, please?
If we don't have a spontaneous love for Krishna, we came to the plant. It's okay for Martina.
Yeah.
Then how... we can develop this spiritual body in the plane of Bindis Kamarupa. We are growing that, but how we can use mix going on with the service exactly, at the same time just fully develop the spiritual body to come to the pattern of spontaneous love in this world.
I think I understand what you're saying. I think what you're saying is, in order to develop bhakti, we have to have pure love, but how do we have pure love in the beginning?
In other words, how can we come to the real transcendental path?
This is such a wonderful question, and this deals with Rupa Goswami's definition of bhakti. Anyabhilasita sunyam kyanakam vanavacham anukulena krishnanishulanam bhakti uttamam. That pure bhakti is free from material motives and not covered by karma or jnana. So you can perform pure bhakti as a beginner. You have to be able to, because Rupa Goswami talks about pure bhakti in three stages: sadhana bhakti, bhava bhakti, and prema bhakti. So he talks about that you can perform pure bhakti as a practice. Now that means you can perform pure bhakti when you yourself are not free of material desires. What does that mean? What does it mean that you can perform pure bhakti, unmixed bhakti, not covered by karma again, and not motivated by material desires, in the stage of practice before you've achieved bhava and prema. And that is, you're not going to Krishna for the purpose of fulfilling your material desires. That's Anya Vilasita Sunya. So if I say the reason I'm worshiping Krishna is I want to become happy in this world, the reason I'm worshiping Krishna is I want to get free from disease, or I want to attain to the Brahman, that's not pure bhakti. If I say, yes, I'd like a new car, yes, I'd like a handsome husband, yes, I'd like a healthy body, but I'm worshiping Krishna whether I get those things or not, and I'm not worshiping Krishna for those things. I'm worshiping Krishna because I want to achieve love for him. I also have material desires. Having material desires doesn't mean that you can't perform pure bhakti. It couldn't mean that. Otherwise, you couldn't have pure bhakti in practice. Does that make sense to everybody?
Yes.
When you're in practice means you have material desires. Has to mean that. Otherwise, you're not in practice. Is everybody following this logic?
Yes.
If I'm in practice, I must have material desires. So how can I have pure bhakti in practice? Having material desires is not the problem. The problem is whether or not I'm going to Krishna for that purpose. Whether or not that's what's driving me to go to Krishna. Just like if you go to one of the shops. Why do you go to a shop? To buy something. After you've bought the thing, you leave. Or if they don't have what you want, you leave. You don't go to the shop to have a relationship with the shopkeeper. You're going for business. You may be pleasant to the shopkeeper, but that's secondary. Maybe you've been to the shop many times and you say, oh, you know, I'm your good customer, so you should give me a good deal. Your purpose for cultivating a relationship with the shopkeeper is for getting a good price. So if your purpose for cultivating a relationship with Krishna is Krishna's powerful, Krishna's God, he's the one who can fulfill my desires, that's not pure bhakti. But if I go to Krishna, Krishna, I'm coming to you because I love you. I'm coming to you because I want to surrender. Yes, I have all these desires, and I'm going to present these desires to you, and you do with them as you like. Krishna, yes, I'd like to get, you know, pass my exam. I'd like to cure my disease. I'd like to get a new house. You should go to Krishna with your desires, by the way, not somebody else. You shouldn't go to the demigods or to the government or to your friends or to your own mind with your desires. And don't pretend to Krishna you don't have any desires. He doesn't like deceit. Krishna doesn't like it. I mean, you can try it and see what happens. I already know what will happen. But anyway, you can try it because I've done it. But you, if you go to Krishna and say, Krishna, I have no material desires. He'll say, really? Would you like me to show you? All right, Krishna. Don't do that. He doesn't like that. He doesn't like cheating. But if you go to Krishna and say, I have a desire for this, I have a desire for this, I have a desire, and I'm so ashamed that I have these desires, and you can do with them as you like. You can fulfill them, you cannot fulfill them. I don't, you know, whatever I surrender to you, I accept whatever you want to do with these desires. Please, Lord, ultimately purify me of these desires and give me love. So that's Anya Vilasita, Sunya. And then Jnana Karma Anavratam is mostly your attitude. If your attitude is that I have to, piety is necessary to help me in bhakti. Or knowledge is necessary to help me in bhakti. That's karma or jnana covered bhakti. If you say bhakti isn't enough. Yes, okay, it's very good you're performing bhakti, but we know you're really not qualified, and so you also have to do this, and you also have to do that, and you also have to do this, and you also have to do that. That's jnana karma covered bhakti. If I'm a pious person to please Krishna, and if I'm a knowledgeable person to please Krishna, that's another. So that can be done even at the stage of practice. So what is the 10th offense? To maintain material, to not have complete faith in the chanting of the holy name, and to maintain material desires even after understanding so many instructions on this matter. So the offense is not to have material desires, otherwise nobody could practice bhakti. You could only be a pure devotee to be a pure devotee. Nobody could ever become a pure devotee. But it's maintaining material desires. So once Krishna shows you, once the guru shows you, hey, this is a material desire, you need to get rid of it. This is an anartha, you need to get rid of it. Then you get rid of it. You don't maintain it. that's how to make fast progress in bhakti. When guru, when shastra, when super soul, when the Vaishnavas make it very clear to you, this thing that you're, I always give the example of a pet. So some people have what they call exotic pets. You know, they have a tiger as a pet, or they have a python as a pet. You've heard about these people sometimes? Right? Nice python. Right? And one day they don't show up to work, and then the police come to the house, and the nice python has eaten the owner. So the person's thinking, this is my pet. It's not their pet. It's their death. So we have all of these anarthas, all these material desires that we think are our shelters. We think that they're lovely. We don't see them accurately. Prabhupada says, bhava sage is when you see the naked form of material desires. So as we advance, jnana dipe nibhashrita, the light comes on and we go, oh my God, it's a python! I've been maintaining a python. And then you immediately get rid of the thing. You put it in a zoo where it belongs, in a cage. Get it out of your bedroom. So that has to be done in bhakti. But if we maintain our material desires, or if our purpose for going to Krishna is fulfilling our material desires, that's not pure. Is that clear what the difference is? What's driving us? And of course, we may think in the beginning that what's driving us is love, and as it's revealed, as Krishna reveals, no, actually, my dear friend, you think what's driving you is love, actually what's driving you is this thing. Then what do you have to do with that thing? Let go of it. So that's pure bhakti. There may be other things motivating us of which we are not aware. And as we become aware, then you don't hold on to it anymore. As soon as you're aware, as soon as you can see, oh, I'm really going to Krishna for this thing, then you immediately let go. And Krishna will show you, oh, actually, you're coming to me with this motive. And you immediately let go. Why? Because that's not what you really want. You really want to go with love. But if you don't really want to go with love, I mean, just think about so many religionists in the world. They don't even want pure bhakti. They don't even know about pure bhakti. They think religion is to go to God to fulfill your material desires. Correct? Am I correct?
Yes.
Or to get salvation. That's how they're defining religion. So that's not true. Is that clear? Thank you. It's excellent, excellent question. Okay, I think we've gone way over time. And I'll get in trouble. Am I getting in trouble with part? No? I won't get in trouble? Okay. No, I'm already 40 minutes over, not 20 minutes to 1 more. It's only an hour plus. Yes, not 2 hours.
Can you pass the microphone?
Yes.
Can you pass the microphone?
She's trying to end the class.
But that's all right. If any of you want to leave, if the class has been long over, so I won't be offended if you leave. But we'll take one more. Yes.
You talked about the aspects of love.
Yes.
And the first aspect was that when you like whatever the other person do.
Yes.
Whatever he does, it's
wonderful.
Yeah, it's wonderful. But infatuation has the same aspect. When you fall in love with someone.
Exactly, yes.
The same, absolutely the same. And
yes.
When mother has his child, her child, she also likes whatever he does.
Yes.
But when some month is going, some month past, I mean,
yes,
for several years, and sometimes when this person, whether it's child or maybe your beloved, he starts doing some ugly things, and
yes,
he doing it for a long time, it becomes irritative, and at the end it brings to some conflicts and separations.
Yes.
Even mother can be very angry and irritated.
Well, you cannot do pure love for a jiva separate from Krishna. You can't do it. It doesn't work. Just like Prabhupada told my father, if you want to have good eyesight, you eat good food. But if you put the food in your eye, you become blind. So you can, if you try to exhibit pure love for a jiva separate from Krishna, you will be disappointed, exploited, cheated, devastated, so many things.
Yes.
You'll think, I just love this child or this beloved, and you overlook their faults, and then you find out that you really shouldn't overlook their faults.
Right.
Your love is misplaced. Now, you can love all jivas if you love Krishna first. If you really want to love your eyes, you put the food in your mouth and not in your eyes. That's how to love your eyes. That's also loving your eyes. Putting the carrots, right? Carrots are good for your eyes, everybody knows. If you put the carrots in your mouth, that's how you love your eyes. But if you put the carrots in your eyes, not going to work very well. So as soon as we try to exhibit this pure love for a jiva in the improper way, we suffer. And therefore we do this bhogatyaga, bhogatyaga, bhogatyaga. We open our heart, we give, we love, and we get hurt.
Yes.
Then we close our heart. We become hard-hearted. No, I'm not going to love anything. And then we're lonely, we're miserable, and we're empty. And we try to love again, and then we get hurt, and then we get lonely, and we go, bhogatyaga, bhogatyaga, bhogatyaga. So Prabhupada says, I like your example, Prabhupada says, we already know how to love. We already know how to love. We already know what is attachment. Gave one wonderful class on Bhagavad Gita 7.1 in Sanan India, one of my favorite classes, said we already know how to love. We already know what is attachment. We don't have to learn that. We already know what is crazy in love. In America, we say falling in love. I heard one devotee saying, God also falls for Radharani. Right? Or what do they say in some countries? You lose your head in love, right? You become crazy in love. So we know, we all know how to be crazy in love. I mean, some people are crazy in love for a machine even. Not even for another jiva. You turn it to Krishna. If you turn it to Krishna, then you won't be disciplined. You won't be hurt. You won't be devastated. And then you'll actually love all other jivas appropriately such that you won't become hurt. But we're not advising to try to give the love that's meant for Krishna to jivas separate from Krishna. It doesn't work. It just doesn't work. You will not be happy in that way. It simply will not work. First of all, you won't be able to maintain that level of love for another jiva. And second of all, that jiva will not be able to reciprocate with you properly. You know, we have a desire for someone that's unlimited and that's unlimitedly perfect. And that is the process. Thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.
Thank you.